Well, I think we can just jump right in because
Sure.
I did a little bit of homework prior to this because until I had figured out you could come on and help me, I hadn't seen a single like second of Rebirth footage.
Oh, so you're just gonna wing it with going in with no one? Fun.
So like I watched Donkey's video for it just to see some of it and have a little bit of feel and get like in the headspace of actually what is Final Fantasy VII.
Sure.
So I think that'll probably be a big one for this episode just because you're playing it, and obviously for those listening, this is not AJ Suave joining me.
No.
This is the pinch hitter, third string quarterback, something, another sports analogy.
Oh, good job. Good sports.
Mike from work jumping in to help me
Hello.
here because AJ is not available. And as usual, this is the With Punished Games cast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Mike from work.
Yeah. But you're one of the few people I know currently playing Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I don't know many others besides myself that are playing it either because none of you guys are playing it, so
Yeah.
kind of out there soloing it this whole time.
And I'm very skeptical about it. And I don't know. I actually kind of meant to go back and listen to our remake episode, but I forgot. And I wanted to like listen how if I come off super negative in that one.
Sure.
Because I think when we first played it, we were kind of just hyped about it in general. And then as time went on, I don't know if it came up much on the show, but like I kind of really soured on it. And so that's why I'm not playing Rebirth yet.
Right.
Just to get that out there. I'm kind of waiting and
Yeah, I didn't go back and listen to that episode either, but I did just replay
Yeah, that's right, you
Remake,
did.
for the lead up to Rebirth. So like I finished it a week before Rebirth came out. And yeah, I mean it's definitely a very similar feeling game. I do think Cloud feels a little bit better, but it's definitely not a massive overhaul of the
Yeah,
combat in any way. So,
right.
if you like the first game, you'll like this one. If you had issues with the first game, you might have similar issues with this one. So,
Yeah.
that's the kind of opening summary.
Yeah. I was skeptical about all the side stuff that I've been hearing about, and we can dig into that a little bit more, but I think I saw a little bit of what you have been wanting to talk about
Okay.
in terms of like the spoilery part at the beginning in Donkey's video, which I think is hilarious that he included
Yeah, if it's
it.
what I think it is, then that is pretty funny to just like immediately go for it. But I guess he's never really cared about spoilers too much in his videos.
I don't know. We'll give the spoiler warning, I
Right.
guess now. If you are planning to play the game, maybe skip ahead, 10 or 15 minutes. I'll actually probably tag it in the episode description, but you've been warned, and it does happen like at the very beginning of the game, right?
Yeah, it's literally the first thing
Yeah.
before you see anyone else. So, yeah, I guess last chance for spoiler, but the first thing that happens is you actually play as Zack in, as far as what I can tell, a like parallel universe.
Okay.
So this was something I'd kind of noticed first time I played Remake and was paying extra attention to confirm it. So, if anyone remembers, in Remake, you are like guided by Scout the dog, or paintings of Scout the dog, like through the one section, and it's supposed to be like Shinra's mascot. It comes up a few times, and he's like this beagle or whatever.
Wow, I don't remember that.
Yeah, but at the very end, like after you do the big fight with Sephiroth, it cuts to a scene of Zack carrying Cloud,
Yeah.
which at first you might think is just, kind of cut to the past when Zack is taking Cloud out of the Nibelheim events. But they actually show like a flyer of a Scout the Dog, the Shinra mascot, and it's a completely different dog, which is what always suggested to me that this is a different parallel universe, different parallel timeline. And then they do the same thing right at the start of Rebirth, where they show the different dog again, show Zack and Cloud approaching the city. But this time it gets weirder with the timeline stuff because it's not, in Cloud's past. It's happening right after the events of Remake. So like they all just fought Sephiroth. The city's a little bit like destroyed because and apparently this universe is where, all of the road and shit was flying up in the air at the end of Remake. So like it opens with that. And everyone's like beat up and being taken by like hospital services. They're all flying away, and Zack gives Cloud to someone outside of Aerith's home, some five, I think it is, and like goes and chases down this helicopter and fights to go, save Aerith. But it looks like Red died in this helicopter crash, and Cloud and Aerith are both in like a coma and have not said anything yet. So it's weird, something parallel going on.
And they had
I've
to try
only
and like link to the weird ending of Remake in the first place, too.
yeah, so I'm very curious what that's going to develop into. Just last night, I had the second scene in that kind of parallel universe, and it was just Aerith's mom coming to collect Aerith and them going back to that house, and that was it. So like I still have no idea what's going on there yet. So obviously I also, I'm about I just got to Costa del Sol, so I haven't finished the game yet, so there's not going to be any end game spoilers because I don't know what's going to happen there. And
Yeah, we're not, this is not a like comprehensive rebirth discussion.
So that's really the biggest spoiler that I'm aware of, is just that whole parallel universe thing. A lot of the stuff in like story-wise like hasn't really changed significantly. There's been some minor tweaks here and there, but I was definitely expecting a little more deviation after the whole, oh, we've defeated the Whispers of Fate or whatever there were in the first game. But it's been pretty beat for beat for the most part, with some small tweaks, but
So I mean, it does that slightly different opening, and then it sort of does it act like it never happened, and you are just continuing after.
you mean like Zack, the stuff with Zack? Well, so that's why I think it's a parallel universe, because yeah, like it doesn't acknowledge that at all, and it doesn't seem like it's a flashback, because again, Red's there and like Aerith's there, so it makes no sense to be a flashback into Zack and Cloud's past. So, and again, different dog for different Shinra mascots. That's always been my biggest throw off. But yeah, after that scene, it goes right into the Nibelheim flashback. So Cloud and the gang are in Calm, and he's telling his story. Anyone who played the demo, it's just that again. They do a nice quality of life thing where if you did play the demo, you can just skip that whole section again,
Oh,
so you don't
that's
have to play
awesome.
through it again. Yeah, which
That's
is really
actually
nice.
really cool.
I ended up playing through it again because Jess didn't see me play the demo, so I got to experience it two lovely times.
And that's where you get to play as Sephiroth, right?
They actually did, for better or for worse, a pretty good job of making Sephiroth feel more like, I don't know, a human in the demo or in the Nibelheim flashback, because like he has a little bit more of a personality. He's not just super soldier that is brooding and stands there and is super powerful.
A personality that may or may not be sexually attracted to Cloud.
Oh yeah, when he calls him a puppy, we could get in that whole dissection. But I feel like they, in the combat sense, they also made him feel not as powerful like as he was in the original. Because in the original, he has like max health, max magic, which he still has max magic, but like he's not one-shotting everything,
right?
Because that wouldn't be interesting gameplay for the modern version.
If they're letting you play through more things instead of like it, all I remember in the original game's flashback is you fight that one dragon, and it's not even really a fight because Sephiroth is just destroying it.
Yeah, there's like the one fight, right, with the van as like you're entering the city, and then I think there was like one fight on the road up to the or on the path up to the reactor, so maybe like two fights in there, and he just obliterates everything.
Yeah,
but of course they stretch it out, so the path up to the reactor is this much longer sequence.
Yeah,
and they actually just have Cloud fight by himself for the most part. But then Sephiroth does hop in later, and like he's strong, but he's not as uber powerful as he was in the original game. Which was a choice, but it's fine.
It's cool you get to play as him at all.
Yeah, it's definitely cool you get to play as him. He has one of his special moves is definitely a move people might remember from the original where he just comes straight down with a sword and impales enemies.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting to see if that's going to come into play later.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
So you're how far now?
So I am in the kind of open world region after Costa Deus Sol. So that's about 30 hours for me, but I am
so you still got a lot.
Yeah, I'm doing everything. I've done every piece of world intel, every side quest so far.
Yeah.
And how this game seems to be structured for the most part is it sort of alternates between a kind of more linear section and then a open world section. So like it opens with Nibelheim, then you can do some stuff in Calm, and then all the open world stuff outside Calm until you cross the swamp, and then to a more linear mine, and an open world area outside Junon, and then Junon is pretty linear. On the ship is just a Queen's Blood tournament. This is the whole
That's
thing
funny.
On the ship. And then you fight a Genova like you do in the original.
Yeah.
And then Costa del Sol, you do a whole bunch of beach stuff. And then I'm in the open world stuff just after Costa del Sol.
So I'm trying to remember the sequence of things. So you're not at Golden Saucer then?
No, I'm approaching there because I believe the next is like the Mount Coriel area, which I think is like Barret's backstory stuff,
okay.
Which then goes into Golden Saucer.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I'm interested to see what they're going to do with Golden Saucer because there's already so many mini games.
Yeah. Well,
they've turned like everything into a mini game.
Yeah, and there's got to be a ton more.
Right. Or at least rehashes of all the ones we've seen already.
I kind of don't even remember many from Golden Saucer other than like Chocobo Racing.
Yeah, so in the original there was Chocobo Racing, there was like a Mog's Adventure thing. You could redo the bike fighting thing. Where you escape on the bike. I think there was a snowboarding mini game. There was
snowboarding even before you would snowboard in the main game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say there was like a dumb like arcade basketball thing.
I actually can picture the basketball one for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
And then there is a battle arena that I think you could do the first time through. I know I always came back and did it later because you had to like grind for some material or some bullshit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a good handful in the original, so I assume they're going to do a little bit of the same, where there's going to be probably a motorcycle minigame, probably snowboarding, probably a dolphin minigame, because we've already had one of that.
Spoilers, I did see something about a dolphin in Dunkey's video.
Yeah. Well, there's a dolphin in the original, so it still tracks.
I don't remember. Yeah, I don't really remember. It has been over 10 years since I played through the original one.
Yeah, so. It's been a while since I played through the original, but I played the original like 3 or 4 times. So,
I technically completed it once. I played it multiple times, but I only completed it one time. Because classic Final Fantasies are brutal, and the only way I was able to beat original 7 was to do the Knights of the Round shit and just cheat, basically.
Yeah. Although I think the modern versions have like speed up, turn off random encounters, potentially even like level up cheats just built in. So there's a bunch of quality of life stuff if anyone wants to go back and play
I
the
want to
original.
revisit 9 and 10 for sure with all of those quality of life things because I never beat 9. I did beat 10.
A
But
nine is one I never actually played much. I played it like for only a few hours at the start at a friend's house,
yeah.
but never sat down and played the whole thing myself.
I
Ten is
love
another one I've
9.
played a few times, so.
I love 9. I think 9's awesome.
Yeah, I've
The
always heard nine is great.
yeah, the way that you can teach basically every party member almost any ability by having it equipped to them, a thing equipped to them, and they learn it over time. It's like the best. That is the
Well,
best shit.
I mean, Rebirth and Remake have that. I mean, you can't give anyone any ability, but they learn their abilities from the weapons that they then have permanently.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
'cause yeah, that mechanic is still in Rebirth. It's basically unchanged, same kind of thing. They did change leveling up otherwise a little bit, I think for the better. So I know I was complaining to you about this a couple weeks ago, Nick, when I was playing Remake. But in Remake, when you level up, like you just level up your weapon, and you just go into like this. It's kind of like the Crystarium from FF13 is the
Okay.
one that seemed most similar to, and like you just pick nodes, and it's like +5% damage or
Right.
whatever.
Yeah.
But as soon as you do it once, the game is like, or you can just have us do this automatically for you, which most people toggle on, and then you never think about it again.
Yeah.
So I thought that was just kind of dumb because then you don't think about it. But that's better than having to go through it because it wasn't a very interesting system. So in Rebirth, they did update it a little, which I appreciate. So it's kind of split into two things now. Your character levels up more than, well, both your weapon and your character level up, and your character has a sort of sphere grid light system where there's just a bunch of nodes, and you unlock a node with your XP, and you get there's different abilities, and there is still something, +200 HP, +5% attack,
But you
but
actually
this
have choices of where to go in the grid instead of just the
yeah.
Crystarium. I love that you came up with that. Never would have remembered that name ever. And you're right, it totally had zero choice,
Yeah.
basically. So.
This one's nice because you can respec at any time as well. But the this is where you kind of get the two new things that they've added for Rebirth. Synergy skills and synergy abilities, which are things you do with your various teammates. So the skills are like smaller attacks. I think one of my favorite is you can have Barret like ricochet bullets off of Cloud's sword. So it's like just a way to give Cloud some quick ranged attacks,
I like the
which
idea of Barrett intentionally shooting at Cloud.
yeah, it's pretty funny. And those don't take ATB. And they, in fact, help build ATB, which is nice. And I actually need to use them more because I keep forgetting about them. And then there are synergy abilities, which, if anyone's seen any gameplay, especially in the trailers, those are the big, flashy two-person attacks that have their own little animations and do a whole bunch of damage and a bunch of stuff. But something I didn't realize they did until I started playing is they also affect you slightly in different ways. So, like one of them gives the two characters temporary infinite MP. One of them gives the characters temporarily three ATB slots instead of two. One of them increases your limit level, so you can do a stronger limit break. But they are a little annoying to pull off. Because the way they work is depending on the skill and the characters, you need to fill up like another gauge with a couple slots, and you fill up that gauge by doing ATB actions. So like you do your standard attack, you have an ATB gauge, you use a special ability, and that fills up one notch on this other gauge. Once you both have three notches, then you can use a synergy ability. So like you really have to kind of be focused and like trying to get everyone using their ATBs. Not that
Right.
they shouldn't be doing their ATB often enough, but
Right.
if you fall into, a habit of, oh, I'm just going to beat on this guy with Cloud and he's the only one filling up this gauge,
Yeah.
then you're never really going to see the synergy abilities.
And no one ever uses their ATB without you doing it manually, right?
So by default, no. But there is a lot more materia in this one that helps with that. So far, I've seen there's one that's like special ability auto use, which is the character's triangle ability. And then I just actually ran into another one that is like automatic ability use. I don't remember exactly what it's called, but it is use an ATB gauge to do a special attack. So that is in there. The other characters definitely still build ATB slower.
Yeah. If
So
you're
that's
not
still,
actively using them.
yeah, if you're not
Yeah.
actively using them. Again, I think there's, a few things like ATB boost or first strike or that sort of stuff that helps a little bit, but it's still definitely you want to pick a character, build it up, use an action, swap to someone else while that animation's playing, build theirs up, do an action, and just kind of cycle through them that way. Which I think is fine. I remember having some reservations about it after the first time I played Remake. But this time replaying through Remake, I kind of got more into the rhythm of it, and I think it's even a little smoother, even a little better in Rebirth. Because you do still have to have, Cloud is your always your party leader, so he's
Yeah.
always who you're going to be playing with. And I think they did make him a little snappier and a little better. And they definitely gave him a gap closing ability, which is super nice.
Yeah, that's good.
Along with the ability to do some aerial stuff so that you
Yeah,
can
I was
hit
just going
things
to
in the
ask
air.
if he could do anything in the air yet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty simple how they do it. You can do circle to dash, and then if you hold square, you just charge at an enemy. You cover a big amount of distance, and if you're in the air, then you can just do aerial attacks. And he'll just stay in the air as long as you are comboing. Because some of your ATB abilities, some can be done in the air, some cannot. So if you use ones in the air, you just kind of keep going and keep attacking until something knocks you out of
That's
the air.
good. Yeah. That's very specifically something that I really didn't like in the first in the in remake, the first one. It's weird to say the first one.
Cloud, Tifa, and Yuffie all have aerial stuff. Barret and Red and Aerith are all ground based, and I haven't gotten the
Well,
kicks into it.
Barret's a projectile at least,
Right.
so yeah.
Right. And I mean, so is Aerith,
Yeah.
mostly magic based. Red, I haven't really gotten a firm grasp on yet. He seems like he is meant to be like a counter build. So, like, you kind of block and then counterattack, and one of his ATB abilities is, a like enhanced counterattack essentially. And just my brain in these games, in basically all fighting games or all games with fighting, is I hardly ever block.
Now,
So
yeah, and in something, I'm trying to even picture, I guess as soon as you swap to him, it's like totally change what you're planning to do. It's like, okay, I'm just gonna block with him.
so
Which would be, I can see that being a little difficult
Yeah,
in the
so
heat of
it's
the
a little
moment.
weird. I'm sure there's a good way to play with him, and I just haven't quite mastered it yet, which is a shame because Red was always one of my favorite characters in the original game. So I was
Yeah.
really excited to play as him, and he's just the one that's j not jiving with me the most. So maybe I'll just need to practice with him.
Yeah, and you still got plenty of time.
Yeah, I still got
'Cause
plenty
the
of
game is
time.
supposed to be like upwards of 80 hours, I think is what I keep hearing.
Yeah, I've heard like anything between 80 and 120. So,
Yeah.
and like I said, I'm doing everything, so I'm taking my sweet time. So, yeah, I'll be busy for a while still, I'm sure.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it's hard for me to really ask much just 'cause I'm not playing it. But
My kind of short summary, has been it's definitely an open world ass video game,
yeah.
for better or for worse. You climb towers that puts a whole bunch of things on your map. You then go to those things and do whatever BS they want you to do.
How do the towers work? Are they all discrete things you have to figure out how to get to the top of them, or is it just kind of like I'm at the tower, I'm at the top of it and activated it?
Yeah, they're very lame towers. It's just
Okay.
climb these ladders to two or three levels, and some they have you go up three and then down one, but like they're not interesting in any
Okay.
way, which is a real shame.
It's like you gotta wonder what was the point then.
Yeah, like the only semi-unique thing about them is that there's going to be enemies to encounter at the base of each of them. But that's not even like the special fights that are added to your map when you do the tower. So yeah, they're very boring towers. They could have definitely put a little more
What
something
is
in them.
the in-world conceit for the towers?
So, do you know how Chadley's a cyborg, apparently?
I mean, it can't, yeah, it came up in our chat. Like, that's the
Yeah.
only reason I know that.
Yeah. So this is apparently said in the first game at some point I've seen online, which I don't remember even having just played it.
Yeah.
So my only guess is in the Shinra Tower chapter with the battle simulator, if you do that a bunch, you get a little more Chadley backstory. Anyway, like the first time you run into Chadley here, he's like, "I'm a cyborg. Shinra's put these towers all over the place. If you can connect to them and turn them on, I can use them to survey the land."
But why did Shinra put them there and not turn them on?
I think I already forget. I don't know if it was Shinra or maybe the Republic put them there, and they were just turned off as Shinra and the Republic were kind of fighting. And because there's a lot of like ruins and just abandoned stuff from previous wars, I guess. There's a lot more of that kind of lore going on than
Okay.
I ever remember in the original. So I think it's
Oh,
something like
no.
that.
Yeah, when you run around the open world in the original, there's literally
Mean,
nothing.
nothing. Yeah.
It's a flat, just flat ground, and you're gigantic relative to the map.
Yeah, and then you just see some giant ass chocobo feet, and you get a chocobo. You're gonna love the stealth sections to capture chocobos. I can
Well,
tell already.
that's if I ever get around to actually playing it. That is
Yeah.
very, very up in the air.
I'm
Is it
not.
even challenging, or is it just like it's just a barrier that they put in?
It's just kind of a barrier. Especially the second one. Like the whole thing is you have to activate these little train cars that you then just sneak behind so that chocobos don't see you. And it's just there to soak up some time,
Yeah. I
which
mean, to be fair, in the old one, getting a chocobo was sort of tedious.
A little bit. I mean, you just had to be in the right area and then feed it something and kill everything else fast. Doing the full chocobo breeding was definitely tedious.
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, for sure.
Which I don't think there's going to be any breeding in this one.
Probably not.
Because in the first area, you just get a normal chocobo and it goes around and everything. And in For anyone who doesn't know, in the original, you could breed special types of chocobos. So you could get like a mountain chocobo, which could go over mountains, sea chocobo, which could swim across the water, etc. But you had to breed them, and you had to race them to make better ones, and it was all a much later game thing. However, in this one, in the first open world area, you just get a normal chocobo. In the second open world area, you just get a mountain chocobo. Because a bunch of the traversal is just here's this sheer cliff face that you need a chocobo to take up with like super obvious giant like blue chocobo graffiti with big arrows pointing up on it. It's like, why is this even marked this way?
That's for the people that the trailblazers of the
Yeah,
chocobos. Yeah.
of
They
course.
obviously were leaving signposts for when Cloud and gang would be
Yeah.
there.
Although the in-game tutorial does kind of call it out as like egregious graffiti
Yeah,
markings.
see, there you
So it's like,
go.
okay, they know. It's fine.
Yeah. Is it, you said it's blue, it's not yellow. It's not the video game yellow signpost thing.
Well, that's in here as well, but that's not for the Chocobo specifically, but there any cliffs that you as Cloud climb up. Yeah, bright yellow.
You know what's that made me realize is that like you have to step back and think about when this game was being developed and how Final Fantasy games in general have never really been traditional video games. Like they've always been their own thing,
Sure.
other than being like traditional JRPGs, I guess. But as the years went on and Final Fantasy continued to like release games, they were never impacted by modern gaming tropes.
Sure, they
And
just kind
then
of always did whatever they were going to do.
yeah, and then all of a sudden Rebirth is like everything you think about in open world video games.
Yeah.
Like it's like suddenly they were like, well, maybe we should do all of that stuff.
Yeah, which, like, you would think after the amount of open world games we've had and, like, the couple really good ones we've had in the past couple years with Tears of the Kingdom and Elden Ring and stuff, they would have taken some cues from that, but this is a pretty basic open world video game.
Yeah.
The way I've been thinking about it is like if you have a lot of nostalgia for the original, then the open world stuff is just fine because you just get to spend more time in this game with these characters that you love. If you don't really have that nostalgia, then you at
Yeah.
least need patience for open world BS. Because again, some of it's fine, some of it's a little slow and boring, like the towers are dumb.
Yeah.
So if you don't have, the nostalgia or the patience, then yeah, I don't know how much there is going to be for you in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't like the I would totally still enjoy the nostalgia stuff, and even just watching the Donkey video, I was like, oh, I would really like to see some of these things. But the open world thing has just been kind of not in I'm trying to even think, like pretty much any open world game I play nowadays, I sort of just don't engage with a lot of it. 'Cause
Yeah.
it's been such a common thing forever at this point that
Like, unless they're doing something new with it, it's been there, seen that.
yeah, and clearly this game does not sound like it's doing anything new with it.
Not
It's kind of just
really.
throwing everything that you've heard of into it. I mean, even Final Fantasy 15 kind of did a little new things.
Yeah, I only played a little bit of 15, like the first opening hours. I didn't get super far.
It still was like, here's just a big map and a lot of it is worthless.
Right.
But the idea of traversing that game was all around the car and
Right.
hanging out with the boys. So like
Right.
that was the whole reason you did it, was so that you drove a car, which was kind of fun. Like I had a lot of fun with that actually, even though it was like nothing in the grand scheme of things. It was sort of just an open world Monster Hunter game.
Sure.
Like I did a lot of the hunting side quest
Sure.
stuff in 15.
There's sort of hunts in this one. It's just like one of the open world things you get. Like one of the items is like special combat encounters, which are the same mobs that are just free roaming the area, but like special versions of them that are
Yeah.
a little harder or have another quirk or whatever to them. And then each open world area seems to have like a area boss, which is a bigger fight, which I didn't double check how exactly you unlock them, like how much of the world intel you have to do to unlock them. But at least in the first region, to complete one of the side quests, you need a key item that is only dropped by the area boss. So there's some
Okay.
ways that like force you to do that. I'm not far enough to know yet if like if you're just completely ignoring the world intel stuff, if you're shooting yourself in the foot and are going to be stuck later. I know, Nick, you said some of the reviews kind of suggested that if you're not doing that stuff, you are going to be kind of screwed later on.
It sounds like that's specifically if you're playing on the standard difficulty.
Okay.
It's if you just turn it down to easy, it does sound like you can kind of skip basically everything, which
Okay.
is kind of fascinating and for me is a good thing. So it would be more like, do I want to look at any of this side stuff just because I'm interested in it, not because I have to? Because
Right.
I would say that's actually kind of a surprising choice if the standard difficulty of the game is tuned around the fact that you are doing most of the side stuff. Like that is really out of the ordinary for an open world game, I would say.
Yeah, I'm very curious to get further in and see what that's like. Because so far I've definitely felt like this one's actually easier than Remake was. Like in Remake, I remember having to heal a lot. I was
Oh,
using my
yeah.
items all the time. This one, I'm not really doing it as much. You know,
Yeah.
part of it might be because it's open world and therefore you can just kind of go find a bench to rest on more frequently.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm doing that more instead of spending my items. I'm not sure, but it definitely seems a little easier. But again, that might also be just because I'm doing everything. So, you know, nature of open world games, it's areas tough if you're not leveled, and then you go do everything and level up, and then things become easier.
Yeah. Is there fast travel?
Yeah, there's pretty robust fast travel. So like any
Yeah.
there's chocobo stops scattered throughout the map, and then any like major location where NPCs would be is
Okay.
also a fast travel location. So yeah, just from anywhere, open the map, pick a spot, fast travel to it, and it loads so quickly.
Oh, yeah, that's
It's
right. You did say that. Yeah.
I think this is the first open world game I've seen, you know, developed ground up for the PS5, and man, it just loads super fast. It's
Yeah.
super nice.
And you can go back to areas that you'd been to before.
I believe so. I haven't actually tried yet. But
'Cause
like
you've
I
finished
know,
everything before leaving.
right.
Yeah.
But I know in Costa or when I left Junon, they're like, "Are you sure you want to leave now? You won't be able to come back for a bit."
Yeah,
Um,
'cause
but
of
then you do
story
everything
stuff,
on
I'm sure. Yeah.
right. And then you do everything on the ship, but then in Costa del Sol, they were like, "Okay, the ship's up and running. If you would like to ferry back, you can now." So
Okay.
it seems like you can. I just haven't had a need to yet.
Right.
Oh, did I tell you about the one mini game that is like beat for beat a mini game from Fall Guys?
I saw it. Yeah, I
The
saw it.
frog one.
Yeah, 'cause I think you mentioned it and then it
Yeah.
came up in Donkey's video and I was like, "Wow, it literally
Yeah.
is."
So it's a mini game where you're turned into frogs, which is a classic thing from Seven. And for anyone who knows the Fall Guys mini game, it's where you're on a platform and there's two spinning beams in opposite directions and you have to jump over the beams to not get knocked off. And eventually the platform starts falling away. And they seriously just ripped it directly from it to a hilarious standard. And it's just
Yeah.
like, I can't believe they did this.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh. Something I realized I forgot about, the leveling up procedure. So you can level up your character by getting the abilities and the synergy abilities and everything. But for the weapon, they made that system better where it just naturally gets some stat boosts. But then, almost like another piece of materia, you can just sort of equip a specific ability that you've unlocked. And then these are things specific to that character, and they'll be like, you know, Tifa's unbridled strength lasts 50% longer, or, you know, she does 10% more damage while unbridled strength is on, and that sort of stuff. So
Yeah.
I think that is a much better system because it's just more interesting, gives you a little more choice, makes you like you can build your character a little more however you want, a little more defensive or offensive focused. So I definitely think the level up system is better.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I can't speak to how a lot of that stuff happened in Remake. It just, I did not absorb it. Did not
Yeah.
internalize how it actually worked.
It just wasn't very interesting in Remake. Again, you set
Yeah.
it to auto to whatever you want it to be, and then don't really think about it.
I had that experience with some of the Yakuza games I've been playing, where I'm not going to talk about them much. I've been toying with the idea of doing a like full on Yakuza episode, because I've been like desperately trying to catch up to the current series, and so I've played 4 and 5, and I'm currently playing 6. And in 4, they included an auto level up system, which, like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, absolutely. Like, I'm absolutely turning that on, because most of those games, other than like Zero, which was essentially a quote new game and added a whole bunch of systems, all of them, the leveling up is like kind of pointless. Where,
Yeah, do
like,
you even like get abilities
oh,
in
yeah,
those
you do.
games?
Oh, yeah,
Okay.
definitely. Yeah, the leveling up is like, it's more robust than you would imagine. And basically all it breaks down to is you pick when you unlock something, as opposed to like having much of a like build choice.
Sure.
So there's like a tree of all these different things, and you sort of just work your way through it and unlock things. There's not really a reason to not unlock everything as you're playing it. And
Sure.
so 4 and 5 introduced just auto level up, and I really, really liked that, because the game would basically just pick, as you hit certain points, which things you should have at that point. And it was just super nice to like, okay, I leveled up, and then it'd be like, you got this, you got this, you got this, and then you just
Right.
keep going. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I mean, I think any system that like doesn't really have intentionality to leveling up, like if you're not making interesting choices, then yeah, it should just be automatic. And that's more or less how I felt in Remake, but in Rebirth, I feel like there's just a little more decisions to be made because at least, I'm pretty far. Well, I'm 30 hours in and I'm party level 5, which is how you get additional abilities and stuff in Rebirth. And, there's still a ton of stuff that I don't have yet. So I could respec at any time and, ignore the left side of this tree and focus on the right side of this tree. And maybe by the end, I'll be able to just get everything. But I don't feel like I just have everything, right from the start. So it feels a little more intentional.
That's good. That's what it should be in an RPG.
Yeah,
Like
I agreed.
even a traditional RPG. It was just nice in Yakuza, because it usually didn't matter.
Right.
Like, it's just like, you just wail on people in those games. You don't have to think about them too much.
Oh, one of the nice new abilities they've added for basically every character, as far as I can tell, is they give one of the things you can unlock is an ATB ability that does an elemental damage type without taking MP. So as long as you have these abilities unlocked, you're never going to be stuck in a position like, oh crap, this enemy is weak to fire, and my current party doesn't have any fire materia equipped. I've never run into a situation where neither, like, I had no materia or none of the abilities on any of my characters to do a damage type I needed. So that has been super nice because that was definitely something I'd run into a few times in Remake. Be like, oh, I just can't do anything in this fight. I'm going to restart it, swap out some materia real quick, and then try again. But yeah, I've not really had to swap out materia at all in this one.
That's
Everything's just kind
good.
of worked.
Yeah,
So
that's good to hear too.
I keep thinking about sitting down and trying to do the math of like, okay, if I give two different materia to each character, can I make it so that regardless of what trio I have, I will always have all four elements covered? But that seems too much set theory for me. So I'm just gonna not do that.
I think until you hit a point where it's like, oh, I got screwed because I didn't have a thing,
Yeah.
you don't have to worry about it.
Plus, one of the things you get from Chadley, because he's still developing materia, that's ostensibly why you're doing all this world intel stuff, is he's using that intel to develop materia for you. And one of the ones he's made is a fire and ice materia, so you can cast both elements with the one materia, and then also a wind and lightning one. So, being able to save slots and throw things like there's a new materia like material level up. I don't remember exactly what it's called, but it just takes whatever material it's linked to and puts it up a level. So you put that double with that level up, and now you have both of those spells at the next level, and it's great. So I'm glad they've added a bunch of new things that, weren't in Remake, weren't in the original, that make your materia builds a little more diverse.
Yeah, sure.
I
Yeah.
need to get into it a little bit more because I'm still pretty basic at this point, for my build, and it's just sort of been working for me, and I haven't had to worry about it.
Right.
But even in the original, you could do some crazy combos if you really got into it. So I'm hoping, like, by end game, especially with all Chadley's special materia, you can do some wonky things with your end game builds and crazy materials linking and triggering off each other. And
And then you'll lose all of it for the third part.
yeah, exactly. Because yes, that does happen in this one. You don't lose all of it. You have like some basics, just like, here's a fire, here's an ice, but it is all level one. So, oh, that was something I had thought about and forgotten until just now, that the whole parallel universe thing we were talking about at the start, that might be a sort of explanation for what's going on.
Oh boy.
Like, who knows? I'm not going to speculate too much on that, but that was just a thought. I was like, oh, these characters are all a lower level because they're not who you were playing with in
That's right.
Remake.
Yeah.
So.
That is some real political spin on Square's part, I think, if that's the case. That's funny.
So I don't think that's going to be the case, but I just don't know what's going on there, so I can't rule anything out yet.
Yeah. I think maybe let's move off of Final Fantasy.
Last thing I'll say is Fort Condor sucks as a mini game. Queen's Blood is pretty solid as a mini game,
Yeah.
but they do make you play it quite a lot. So,
Like, make you play it?
they don't make you, but the whole like story that's happening on the ship across the ocean
Yeah.
is a Queen's Blood tournament that I guess you could quit at any time, but like they kind of want you to play it through at that
Yeah.
sequence. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, I think that was it.
'Cause I have one other thing that I think you're interested in. I'm tailoring this episode to you a little bit. And
As you should.
yeah, as I should. The I just wanted to mention the two games that I'm going to talk about this episode are Helldivers 2 and Pacific Drive. And I figured let's hit Helldivers 2 real quick because it's been a bit since our last episode where like late AJ's been a little too busy. Life is crazy for him right now. And he's played a little bit of Helldivers, not as much. I've played it more than him, but Helldivers kind of has had a moment, let's say, in gaming this year. Sort of out of nowhere, kind of became a darling, I would say. I never played the original Helldivers. I remember when it came out, I knew a little bit about it, but just never played it. And then two came out, and I honestly wasn't even really planning on playing it, but a mutual friend was like, "Why aren't we playing this game? We should play this game. We have people to, we have a group to play it with. Like, let's play it." So, kind of just went in blind, and it's exceptionally good. And a lot of people had that exact same experience because they were not expecting how many people were going to play this game. Like when it came out, it was 100% not ready to handle the player count that it was seeing. And so it's been a like runaway success. And that's amazing for that developer. And the original one was like an isometric top-down twin stick shooter type game where the conceit for it specifically was that there's friendly fire. So it's a co-op shooter where you're fighting off hordes of like bugs and robots and stuff, but you can kill each other. And it's really easy to kill each other that it's almost kind of funny. when stuff like that happens. Like it's like a joke. It's meant to happen. And so, two, Helldivers 2 moved into like a traditional over-the-shoulder third-person shooter, but is still the same team of four, drop into a planet, very easy to kill each other. And the coolest thing I think about that game is that it just really nails this visceral experience of a battlefield.
Really?
Yeah, like it's a little hard to describe, but even playing something like Call of Duty or Battlefield games, like there was always, for me personally, there's always this like separation of it's a video game. I know that this is a video game. I know that, like, and also being in first person, you can't do much camera shaky bullshit because you're in first person and you make the player like vomit. But Helldivers 2 is in third person. It's zoomed out a little bit, and it has this like weight to how you move around and all the explosions and the camera and everything, that it just feels really intense. Like the game is intense the whole time.
That is like not something I had really heard anyone talking about it.
There is just this like, the only time there are quiet moments are when you maybe get a little bit of a breather running across the map between points.
Sure.
Anytime you're doing anything and there's enemies attacking you, it is like chaos. And it's chaotic because you know your teammates can accidentally kill you.
Sure.
In addition to what all the enemies are doing. And like, you can do different difficulties per mission, so like you can scale the difficulty, and like as you scale it up, obviously more enemies are thrown at you, and it's even more crazy. But like the coolest thing about Helldivers is that you are literally diving in from drop pods from a ship in orbit of a planet, and that ship is always in orbit, and you as the player has abilities that can be called in from the ship at any moment to just land on the planet.
Yeah, and that is super cool from what I've seen from it. Just like, oh, I need a quick orbital strike to blow the hell out of these things.
Yeah, right. And so like, that's what adds to the intensity, is that like, yeah, you're down there, your guys literally boots on the ground, shooting some guns, maybe throwing some grenades, but then also you have fucking interplanetary like destroyers in the orbit that can just rain down nukes or something when you need them. And so like everybody can do that at any time.
How frequent are those? Are those
very
like
frequent, constant?
So they're like on a cooldown. It's not
they're on cooldowns. Yeah,
ultimate that you use once a level or anything.
No. Okay. You are like using them all the time. So you're like shooting people, and it's a shooter, whatever. And
well, you're shooting bugs.
You're shooting
bugs.
You're shooting bugs. It's basically Starship Troopers. Like literally, it's very funny. It's very tongue in cheek. The game has like a really good sense of humor overall in general. But you all come into each mission with a set of stratagems, is what they're called, that you pick, and there's like a ton of them, and you unlock them as you play and level up and stuff. And you actually kind of don't want to overlap each other with them, because you want to have a broad range of like what's available. But as far as I understand, if you have a similar stratagem as another player, I think it increases the cooldown.
Oh.
So like you can both fire it off.
Right.
But it might take a little longer to spool up. But if you all are doing different stratagems, then it's your own individual cooldown. And so like what that leads to is
that's a neat touch. I like that.
Yeah. And it makes sense too.
Yeah.
You are, all four of you have your own stratagems. And also my favorite thing about this is how you call them is you have to do a sequence of arrow inputs.
Really?
So like on WASD, if you play with mouse and keyboard, you have to do like up, up, down, left, left, right, or something. And you have to do it like in the heat of battle. So like
That's pretty funny. That adds
into the intensity because you can't just like you can't just press a button and it like does the strategy.
Yeah. From what I had seen, I assumed it was just like almost like a flare grenade. You just throw where you want it to be and then shit rains down.
You do that, but to activate the thing that you're throwing to rain it down, you have to put in the stratagem first. So like, it's like this. It's also another joke in the game because when you're waiting before deploying, they have a little arcade machine in the ship called Stratagem Hero, and it's just it's just rifling through these like arrow input sequences as fast as you can before a timer runs out.
Excellent.
And so it's like Guitar Hero with stratagems. Yeah, yeah. It's super funny. But like, you're doing that. All four of you at the same time are like, I'm calling in an airstrike here. And then you see like, you just see like a wave of bullets come like shooting in and like take out a bunch of things. And it sounds real crazy. And then another person calls in like a massive bomb. And so it just like everything is exploding over here. And somebody's calling in like a laser from your ship that is like the Hammer of Dawn in Gears of War. Like, sure. It's literally a space laser that is just like running. It's like doing a serpentine path through the level that is seeking enemies and just like killing everything. It's just so crazy. Like, there is just so much craziness happening at all times.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah, it sounds very intense. It sounds very cool. I'm excited for whenever we finish our current game night game, because I assume we'll be picking that up next.
Because
it sounds super rad.
I really, really like Helldivers. I have definitely taken a break from it for now, just because it is kind of a lot of the same thing.
Sure.
The loop is that you're unlocking new abilities and stuff.
Sure.
Or stratagems or whatever. And that is like enough to keep going through it.
I assume there's also a bunch of like cosmetics and stuff that you're unlocking.
I was trying to think like the other stuff you're unlocking. Not only is it like a great game, but it's actually a really good player experience.
In general. I was curious, like, it, because it's not a free to play thing. It's like a $30-$40 game. Right?
It's, and then 40
it has
bucks.
Season pass stuff.
It's $40 on PC. I'm guessing it's the same on PS5. I'm not actually sure. But it has a free battle pass, quote, battle pass. It's not even really a battle pass. But it has a free battle pass that as you're playing through the game and doing missions and completing missions, you get a currency that you like spend on the pass. Mm-hmm. And so you can pick and choose things you get. They can be cosmetic, they can be in-game weapons, they can be whatever. And then they have a premium tier, which is a more traditional battle pass that works exactly the same way. You just have to technically pay for it. But you do earn the in-game currency that buys the battle pass.
Okay.
Which is amazing. So, yeah. Like, you theoretically could never buy it and be fine. You just have to play it a lot.
Right. Which, so, I mean, that's how those things should be if they're going to be in
absolutely.
The game at all.
Yeah.
Because, that's a whole nother discussion. We'll save that for a different podcast.
Yeah, and it's there's like, I have zero complaints about how
it's doing all that.
The thing that works in Helldivers. It's like really good. It's very player positive and focused. It's not money grubby at all.
That's
if anything, they deserve more money because it's like
say,
a really good thing.
Now, hopefully it's a case of, we weren't expecting this to be this big, so all of this is just profit on top,
right.
Instead of going, we now have a huge player base, let's see if we can milk them. But
yeah, and I think the plan, and here's another cool thing about it, is that those, we'll just keep calling them battle passes.
Yeah.
That is essentially what they are. They don't go away.
Oh.
So, like, you don't miss out on them.
So even if we, start playing next month or whatever, 3 months after launch, all that stuff will still be for us to get eventually.
I believe that is the plan. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And again, just very consumer friendly.
Well, you would hope if it's still a full price game that they're not gouging you too bad on the in-game monetization.
Well, let me tell you about every other modern video game and a battle pass, because that is usually how it works.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't be.
That's right. It shouldn't work that way. Lastly, there is something. There is like a like meta narrative to Helldivers that is pretty neat that the developers are like actively
Yeah, I've heard a
keeping up
little bit
with,
about this.
where they essentially have somebody playing as a dungeon master in their behind the scenes work, and they are incorporating like content drops with narrative things.
Okay.
So I haven't played it in a couple weeks, but the most recent one was that they added in mechs. So
Sure.
like you can, I think you have to be like max level at this point, but like you can call in a mech to get in and ride and drive around
Nice.
and kill things with. And the way that they introduced it was not just, hey, mechs are available now. You had to do you had to liberate a planet.
Oh.
That is where the mechs apparently were being manufactured. And as soon as the community collectively liberated this planet, that would unlock them for everybody. And there is this community-driven galaxy map that is the whole
Okay.
game, basically. So, like, when you go to pick a planet to go to, you're looking at a map of the galaxy or the solar system. I think it's
Sure.
the galaxy. You're looking at this map, and like certain sectors of the galaxy are where everybody is campaigning.
Okay.
And when you click on the planet, it'll say whatever percentage liberated. And that means like as a community, everybody that is doing missions on that planet is b
Is
filling up that.
contributing.
Yeah. And when you finish a mission, it'll be like you contributed 1/10th of a percent to this planet. Which is like really funny,
Yeah. That's
but
super cool. I feel like
yeah.
that sort of community, everyone get together, let's do this stuff is always neat when it's done well in a game.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of like we briefly played Get the Fuck Out as a group,
Yeah.
and remember how like they would do seasons of like this is what the map is essentially going to be.
Yeah.
And that's what it reminded me of like the dedicated community is going to like pick apart this map and know how to play it and know how to do
Right.
it. Helldivers is a little different where it's just everybody focus on this planet
Right.
and do stuff there. And like the different planets will have like different, visual aesthetics and
Sure.
they'll have different like weather patterns and things like
Sure.
that. They'll have specific things like that, which I really appreciate as somebody who needs variety. So like I think that's great that like you aren't just always playing the Mars like planet. You can
Right.
like jump to an ice planet or something.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
So
sounds really cool. I'm excited for us to eventually get around to it.
it would be a good one for
Yeah.
us for sure. Probably why I haven't played too much of it is I don't want to get burnt out on it, but
Yeah.
I put about I think a little over 10 hours into it.
Okay. 'Cause yeah, I mean, once we get to it in a few weeks, I assume all of the any lingering, release bug should be ironed out
I
and
think it's
hopefully
good now.
already. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good finally. I mean, it's been a little over a month, I think, since it
Yeah.
technically came out. They fixed all the server stuff,
Okay.
as far as I know. There was this whole thing where you can wear different armor types, like light, medium, or heavy. And that changes some statistics. For the first month and a half of that game's life, none of that mattered. It just didn't work.
Great.
But I think they fixed it now. They just announced the other day that they're going to add in weapon mods, which is good
Oh, nice.
because frankly, like in terms of what you can actually like play with in that game, there isn't that much.
Okay.
There's guns that you unlock, and like I said, there's a bunch of stratagems, but they're all kind of just riffs on the same thing.
Sure.
So,
So yeah, being able to add mods will be a nice way to freshen that up.
yeah. Like some actual like customization of this is what my build is
Right.
would be good. So,
Yeah.
yeah. Helldivers 2 is very solid. So,
Sounds
only
neat.
on PS5 and PC.
I keep forgetting it's like a console exclusive on PS5.
And it like will be forever, probably.
Really? It's not a timed one? I just feel like everything's a timed thing nowadays.
No, I'm pretty sure the original Helldivers was also only PlayStation and eventually came to PC.
Okay. Well, at least it's coming to PC. Or came
to
PC.
2 is on PC now. Okay, so the other thing, and the only other thing we'll finish the episode with, is Pacific Drive.
Yeah. Yeah, which, I'm excited for this one.
I knew nothing about this game at all.
I'd seen it coming up in like headlines of, you know, different video game websites being like, oh, this is, you know, a game that's coming out. Keep your eye on it because it looks super rad. And then I played it during Steam's Next Fest last month or whatever it was. So I played the demo, which is just like one chunk, but it's still, you know, enough to, you're driving around in this spooky Pacific Midwest, Northwest, and you just have this station wagon that is your home base, your tank, your transportation, and your
lifeline.
Yeah. So you, you're scrounging resources and repairing the station wagon and giving it upgrades and you're using it to navigate and just trying to survive out there. That's basically as far as the demo got. It sounds like you're getting a few more mechanics that I never saw in the demo.
Yeah.
The full thing.
It's really... it is deep. I don't want to say it's not like deep in terms of like, oh my god, my car is like so different than your car. Like it's
sure.
That's not really the case, I don't think, for anybody, if I had to guess. But it does have this really good loop of, it's essentially a roguelike.
Yeah.
Where like whenever you go out on, let's step back. You're set in some weird zone, and it's just called the zone.
Yeah.
Where lots of goofy stuff is happening. paranormal things, weird weather patterns, the terrain is changing for some reason on its own, things like that. There's puppet type people that just are around and essentially alive.
That's not terrifying.
And you're just sucked into this zone at the beginning of the game, and you're like, you have no idea what's going on, and you find this station wagon that has special abilities. It's essentially alive.
A somewhat sentient station wagon.
Yeah. And the thing that I would describe it as is in Control, specifically Remedy's game, there's this whole thing of like objects of power have like some paranormal ability tied to like a washing machine or something, or like a vacuum cleaner,
right?
And like the Bureau of Control or whatever, I think that's what it's called, right? Bureau of Control.
I think so, yeah.
They are like focused in on studying these strange occurrences and like collecting these objects of power, and so your station wagon is essentially an object of power.
Nice.
And you get introduced to people in the game that are like stuck in the zone. They live in the zone.
Yeah, they were. And they're talking a little bit.
Yeah, they're talking to you over the radio, and they're like, "Oh my god, you found a remnant! Like that's really rare. Like we don't really see them that often." And it's a car, and they're like, "I can't believe it's a car."
Yeah,
and so like, the whole game, there is a narrative, is you kind of like wading into the zone and learning things as you go about like the people that used to work here. Kind of reminds me of the Dharma Initiative from Lost.
Sure.
There's people stuck there that were like actively researching this area. And at some point, everybody had to get out because stuff went south. And you just happen to get sucked into it. And so now they're like, oh, they have a name for your person. And I already, a breacher, I think.
Oh, sure.
Because like nobody's able to get into the zone from the outside. It's like totally walled off by like 100-foot tall walls
sure.
or something. And you end up getting sucked into it, and they're like, how the hell did you get in here? And they call you a breacher because sometimes it happens, I guess. And the breacher is always tied to a remnant, which in this case, it's your car. And eventually it drives the breacher insane.
Oh, good.
So
that's
like
what
that's
you have to
the
look forward to.
Yeah, so like there's this layer, like fatalistic layer to the game of like, are you ever actually gonna get out of here? I don't
sure.
know. Which
I mean, my car would never do me dirty like that. So
I know, right? You know. Mine neither. My favorite thing about this game is that I'm coming off of having read the Southern Reach trilogy a couple months ago, which is a series of books that are essentially about the same thing, and it's what the movie Annihilation is based on.
Yeah.
And basically, once you enter Area X in Southern Reach, it's over. You're usually not coming back out.
Yeah.
And so that is what the zone in Pacific Drive basically is. And so all of that said, you're like doing these runs with your car, slowly creeping your way towards the center of the zone. And as you get towards the center, things get weirder. And all the while you're doing this, you're collecting resources that you can upgrade your car with. And like that loop of like scrounging around for stuff to upgrade your car is actually like really fun.
Yeah.
It's super tedious.
Yeah, I remember that from the demo. Like, you have to, you know, anytime you stop the car, you put it in brake, you can turn your lights off, you turn the car off, you open the door, you get
yeah.
out of the car.
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
And you have to do that all the fucking time.
Yeah. It definitely seems like one of those things that, like, it just kind of revels in the tedium. Like,
definitely. Yes, definitely.
You just kind of have to embrace it. I think you may have already made this comparison at one point, but like very Death Stranding, like you just
yeah.
sort of have to embrace that. All right, traveling across this expanse is the game. So I want every
yes.
little bit of that experience to be a part of the game.
And you're traveling. So like you're going on these runs, you're getting out of your car, you're scrounging around derelict buildings and whatever, and you're gathering stuff and you're bringing it back to your car. And so like it adds this level of stress that it is run based. Like you
right.
can die. You can lose everything if you're not careful or if you don't get out in time.
Right.
So like this game dumps all of these like systems on top of each other that I can't really think of another example of, but like it's a strand game and it's like Death Stranding in that like you're hauling a bunch of shit.
Right.
And it becomes really stressful because you don't want to like lose all of that shit or like
right.
mess up the path. Like you don't want to fail on the path. So there's that. Then you're making permanent upgrades to your garage back
mm-hmm.
like outside of runs because then you can do other things better to make your car better and whatever. Then it's almost like a battle royale because every time you're in one of the areas of the zone, you have to be fast or it will start closing in on you and you'll die.
Right.
Because essentially what you're doing is you are finding a pocket of a stable zone. And so that zone, that stability, is only stable for like 15 or 20 minutes.
Right.
And then as soon as that timer like hits, it starts literally closing in walls on you, like
nice.
Like a battle royale. Like, so it'll do like you'll hear a siren, and you'll be like, oh shit. So then you have to like activate a certain exit. You have to drive to the exit, and it's really fucking intense because it's this huge beam of light
yeah.
that you can see basically from anywhere in the map. And you have to get to that beam of light to get teleported out before the zone will close on you once, and then you're constantly taking damage, and
sure.
then it'll close on you a final time.
Mm.
And if it ever closes on you a final time, you die.
Yeah, that was in the demo a little bit, or at least like they alluded to it, but
yeah.
I feel like they probably didn't put the pressure on too high because then
right.
yeah, like at the end I activate the exit and the pillar shoots up and they say something about it closing in, but the pillar was really close, so I didn't like feel that intensity the first
Oh,
time,
yeah.
but I've heard you and other people talk about like that part's like, yeah, you gotta haul ass at that point, otherwise you're gonna be screwed, which sounds super neat. Like
It's
it sounds like a good intensity spike.
always across the map.
Really?
And it's on purpose because so one of the resources that you're gathering during your runs that is more of a rare resource is this like MacGuffin energy that apparently is what is keeping the zones stable. So as soon as you remove this thing, it's an anchor point is what they are. Like as soon as you remove this anchor, shit goes a little crazier. And there will be multiple anchors in a map,
Sure.
and you want to get them because you need that material to like do upgrades and stuff. And you need that material also to escape the zone. So
Okay.
like you're building up this material in your car, and then it's essentially like powering the DeLorean.
Sure.
And once you meet a certain threshold, you can then activate a gateway to leave. But you have to be a certain distance away from a gateway before you can activate it.
Sure.
So then it kind of like forces this stress of I activated this, I now have to get there
Yeah.
because I'm like 2 or 3 miles away or whatever. It won't let you do it if you're right next to a gateway,
Sure.
basically.
That's super smart. That
So
seems.
then, right. And so then it adds in this next layer of like, okay, I activated it. Everything's going to shit. The walls are closing in on me. Stuff is trying to stop me from getting there. You're dodging like all of these things along the way. Like the road is popping up and
Nice.
like static electricity things are like popping up in the middle of the road and shocking your car. Like there's this radiation happening all
Yeah.
the time. As you get deeper into the zone, there's even more crazy shit happening. Like there's these enemies that are around that can like grab your car and like pull it away.
Yeah.
There's a similar enemy that grabs pieces of your car and steals it.
I didn't see that. I got pulled by one in the demo, but one that just like
Yeah.
rips off a chunk of your car, that's
There's
pretty funny.
one that just straight up steals pieces of your car.
Great.
Then there's like things that are like explosive. There's like shooting out explosions of radiation that like it's just like sometimes all of that stuff piles up to just be total chaos.
Sure.
And it's like you're playing a bullet hell game kind of in a car in first person, just trying to get to this exit. Like it's very unique.
Yeah,
Very unique.
that sounds pretty cool.
And I've really enjoyed it. I'm probably nearing the end of the story, I think. I'm
Okay.
almost to the center. There's three areas to the zone.
Sure.
So you spend a bunch of time in the outer one, and then I've sp honestly not spent that much time in the next one, and then my current goal is to get into the center.
Sure.
So, and I've played it for about like 15 hours or so, which I'm
Huh. Yeah,
surprised.
that's more than I would have expected.
I did not expect it to be that long.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really cool. You have zero things you can do to the environment. So
Right.
like you'll hold all these different tools and you even get a crowbar and stuff, but none of it is for attacking. None of
Right.
it.
Yeah.
All of it is
It's just
for
like
like,
breaking into places and getting resources.
yeah.
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 Yeah, I'm really pumped about it. I would be playing it already if all of my time wasn't going to Rebirth, but as
Yeah.
soon as I'm done Rebirth, that'll definitely be something I'm picking up next.
Yeah. I think it's great. I'm really enjoying it. It's very stress. It's like part stressful, but also part chill,
Yeah,
weirdly.
it seems to walk that line well, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm just going collecting stuff with my buddy, my station wagon, and then
Yeah.
like you throw on the accelerant when you're trying to race to that end, which it sounds really cool. It sounds like a good kind of roller coaster.
There's also this like you get used to it pretty quick, but there when you first start playing that game, you don't it's one of those situations of I don't know what can happen.
Sure.
I don't know what the rules are here.
So you're just hesitating around every corner because, like, I don't know
Yeah.
what's about to happen. That's neat.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Like it has this really good atmosphere of like everything is really intense and stressful and it feels like a horror game. because it feels like it's nighttime all the time, sure. even though there is a day-night cycle. It just straight up feels like it's dark all the time. Like, yeah. My experience playing that game is it is primarily nighttime.
It is either nighttime or overcast.
Yeah.
There is nothing
yeah.
else. Nice.
And nothing is outright, like, around other than they're called tourists.
Okay.
And they are essentially just mannequins.
Great. Never creepy.
That as soon as you don't look at them, they move.
Of course.
So it's one of those. But it's not consistent. So, like, they might not move.
Sure.
They might just be there and, like, you can ignore them. But sometimes you'll see a group of them off doing whatever, standing still. And then you'll like, get distracted, and then you'll turn around, and they're, like, right there. They're, like, right on top of you. And so
great.
The only thing that they do to you is you take radiation damage when you're around them.
Sure.
So, like, but there is, like, this constant threat of basically a jump scare.
Yeah.
Because they sort of can come out of nowhere
sure.
sometimes.
Yeah, you just
like you might
see them out of the corner of your eye and then look back and... There they are.
Or you don't realize they're there at all.
Yeah.
And so you'll, like, not even realize that you're not looking at them, and then you'll be doing your thing, and then, oh, wait, there's, like, 10 of these things around me.
that sounds pretty great.
The last layer is the game has a Metroid Prime scanning thing to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty cool. You kind of have to scan everything in the game because some upgrades are tied to having that information.
Sure.
So, like, you'll go to, like, buy an upgrade for a thing, and it'll be like, scan this strange, you don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
So then you kind of have to, it's a way to force learning about the world.
Sure.
Which is awesome. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that sounds super neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been great.
Nice. Yeah, I'm excited to play it. I'm a little annoyed it didn't come out either right before or a little bit after Rebirth so that
yeah.
I could play it, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, it'll always be there.
Yeah.
The only other thing I wanted to mention is that the stuff that the demo probably didn't show you is that your car can develop quirks.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about that was definitely not in the demo, but this sounds
yeah.
very interesting.
It really is interesting. I was, like, kind of mad at it at first because I was like, the way that you determine your car has a quirk is, like, totally ridiculous. but basically, as you go into the zone and spend time with your car doing things, it'll just, like, kind of get sick.
Right.
That's, like, your car gets ill.
Like all real cars, they just start making a noise at some point.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's literally that experience. And, like, when you come back to the garage, you have to do a lot of management on your car. Like, you have to fix individual pieces. You have to swap out pieces. It's cool. Like, I haven't gotten tired of that yet.
Yeah.
And that's where I would say, like, it is a ton of tedium.
Sure.
But it's, like, tedium I enjoy. But whenever you develop these quirks, it'll be something like every time you turn your lights on, your car drives slower. Or, like, every time you turn your lights on, your windshield wipers turn on. Or, like, when you open this door, the other door opens.
Right.
So it's, like, kind of silly shit
yeah.
like that. But one of the ones I had very early on, which was awful, was that whenever you turn your steering wheel all the way to the left or all the way to the right, your headlights don't work.
That's
and
hilarious.
And so because the game is dark 90% of the
uh-huh.
time, getting around without my headlights was miserable. And so there's a way to diagnose what's going on with your car. It's this computer in the garage, and it's sort of like a Obra Dinn Golden Idol
game.
Word game kind of thing, where, like, there's four rows of words that related to your car, like items, parts of your car, and things that happen when that part is doing something.
Okay.
And it is completely inscrutable at the very beginning of the game, because it's just like, here's a list of every aspect of your car. And then every one of those aspects has like another list. Mm. And then here's another list of every aspect of your car. And then here's another list of all of those things. And you have to kind of just be like, okay, when I'm driving my car, or you pick like car and then driving car and then headlights turn off.
Okay.
And it's like things like that. It's like that series.
Sure.
And then you're just straight up guessing.
Sure.
Unless you clearly see what happens when you get in the car, and like you can like do a lap around the garage and try and figure out what is causing things. But for me personally, my situation was wheel turns very hard left, lights go off.
Sure.
And like there's a million other things happening with your car that it's not like totally clear.
Sure.
That's what caused that.
Sure.
And so when you go into this computer to try and guess, it'll be like 2 of 4 correct. It doesn't tell you which ones. It just says like 2 of 4, 3 of 4. So it was like really brutal at the beginning of the game. And then as you upgrade your garage, one of the upgrades is you can get hints, and then you can get confirmation that the thing that you picked is correct before actually submitting your query. And so like it got like way better. And at this point I can like reliably diagnose a quirk and fix it, which is good. But like when it first starts out, that like turn wheel can't see like was horrible. That was like one of the worst things to get immediately, basically.
Yeah, that sounds like a very neat system, because again, it sounds a lot like, you know, a real car situation. You're like,
yeah,
when, you know, I make left turns, I hear this thunking on my front right wheel. I don't really know what's going on. So yeah, then you take it to a mechanic, but in this, you got to be the mechanic.
You are the mechanic. Yeah.
That's super fun. That seems really cool. When you first described that to me, I was like, that system sounds rad as hell, and I'm pumped to play this game.
There's a whole lot of things going on in the game that are just, like, really impressive.
Yeah.
And I have no idea where this game came from. I think this is the developer's first game.
Yeah, I didn't recognize the developer, and they're not even coming to me now, so.
It's Ironwood, which I didn't see that they had done anything else before, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But it's very cool. Very, very interesting experience that I definitely recommend. And now that I understand how quirks work, it's kind of funny to like see one happen.
Sure.
Because like I think now I have one currently where like whenever I get in the car, my windshield wipers turn on. But like they don't turn on fully. They'll like go halfway up the windshield.
Great.
And then they just stop there.
That's pretty
funny. Like it's kind of silly.
Yeah.
It's like silly things like that.
Which like that almost feels like, you know, that kind of makes sense with the, I guess not haunted car, but like this possessed car is just sort of like playing pranks on you. Like as you spend time with it, it's just like, oh, I'm gonna do something silly now.
Yeah.
It gives the car personality.
It totally gives the car personality.
Yeah.
Like, and I told you guys about how there was the one, like, zones will have effects happening in them sometimes, and the one was like Betrayer.
Yeah.
And like I didn't know what that meant, and it doesn't give you any information, and so I was just doing my thing, and I got out of my car and I turn around and it's trying to run me over all of a sudden.
Which is
like it was
incredible.
Clearly trying to run me over.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, it's super good. Well, maybe, and it's got a bunch of grenade rolling down the hill moments.
Yeah.
I saw one on Reddit where somebody was carrying one of those anchor points, and like because they grabbed it, it activated all of these insane situations happening, and they dropped it, so it literally was rolling down a hill.
Perfect.
And while they were trying to get it, all of this environmental stuff was like messing with them and like preventing them from getting to it, which is super funny. Yeah. So stuff like that happens pretty frequently, actually.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
Maybe I won't wait for Rebirth to be over. Maybe I'll make some time for this.
It's a good little... I play it, like, some runs can take kind of a while, actually. And you can't save in them in the middle of them.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, it is sort of like I'm going to pick this up and play it for like half an hour and then take a break
Sure.
or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Pacific Drive, real good. Highly nice. Recommended.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to do it because you've just been playing Rebirth, right? Is there anything you want to talk about?
The only other thing I've been playing is Balatro.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I real yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
we can
we
do
should
a quick
give
snippet
that.
On that.
Yeah.
So Balatro is a game where you are ostensibly just making poker hands, trying to beat a score that the game is giving you. And you know, different hands will be worth different amounts. But the way it does it is, you know, say a pair is 10 chips times 2. It has a chip value and a multiplier value. And, you know, the better the hand, the higher the value is. So, like, a 4 of a kind will be, I don't know what the number is, but 40 chips times 4 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to play a few hands, and you're just trying to beat this score. But it's also a roguelike in the sense that you have a run, and as you play hands and beat these blinds, you get a shop where you can buy jokers that do a whole bunch of different crazy stuff to your hands. Some of them will be like, you know, you can make a flush with 4 cards instead of 5 cards. Some of them will be like, okay, all spades and clubs count as the same suit for flushes.
Mm-hmm.
Ones that are like, if you play a 4 of a kind, multiply your multiplier by 4. So like with all these different things going, you can get these crazy synergies that just multiply your score into the stratosphere. Cause along with the jokers, there's other cards that, affect your deck. There's tarot cards that allow you to remove cards from your deck. There's tarot cards that allow you to turn, you know, all 5 of your, you know, current cards turn into clubs. So you can do things like have a flush 5 where you play 5 aces of clubs because you've just modified your deck enough.
Mm-hmm.
You can apply, you know, modifiers, so it's worth more chips, it's worth more multiplier, just a ton of stuff going on. And with the right kind of builds, you know, you start by playing hands where you score 50 points, 100 points, you know, in that range. And by the end of the game, you're playing hands that score you 100,000 points, millions of points, to the point where if you get really into it, exponential values of points, like literally, I think it caps out at 10 times or times 10 to the 30. and then the counter just breaks and people have just gotten it there.
Nice.
So it's like, it's certainly a dumb little game, but it's just a game where if it clicks with your brain and you just like seeing big numbers go up, then you'll just keep playing, trying to get that great hand with that great multiplier and all those jokers lining up to just be devastating. And it's simple, but it's just really good.
And it's caught on quite a bit. It's taken the world by storm a little bit.
Yeah, it's gotten a pretty huge reception to the point where I think it's been delisted on the Switch in the UK for like
currently
gambling
I think,
stuff. Even like there's no real money involved at all. Like there's nothing you're really gambling with. It's just you're trying to get these big numbers. But
it brought up a funny point that like rogue games in general are gambling.
Yeah, for sure.
You're gambling with your progress.
Yeah.
And I never really thought about that.
I think about that a lot in Vampire Survivors. I would think about it when I was like, when I was really into it and I was trying to get intentional builds. Like, okay, I want this item. And like, yeah, every time you're like, no, I got to reroll. I got to not take something this time in the hopes that what I need is coming up later. So there's a lot of, you know, not going to take this now in hopes that I get that later and just hoping things work out and gambling on it. And sometimes it just doesn't work out, but you know, at the end of the day, it's not like you put real money on it. It's just the game. So I don't know why they're banning it, but
it's weird.
That's
not for me to decide,
I guess.
Yeah. It just brought up that thing. It's like, well then all rogue games should be banned.
Right. Yeah.
if that's the logic.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this one, just because it's literally
it's
poker
cards.
Hands.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little closer to home. for most.
Yeah.
So I guess, but
Yeah.
yeah, it's super good. That was another one that was part of Next Fest. I don't know if there's still a free demo available or if you can only
I
get
don't
the whole
know.
thing, but if it piques your interest, yeah, give the demo a look, and just play around with it for a bit. The full game has a ton more jokers than what was in the last demo, which just makes it more interesting, but you'll get the idea. It's neat, it's fun. It's definitely a little addicting. It's a good time.
Yeah, it sounds addicting for
Yeah.
sure. Not for me, but
Yeah,
I get
yeah,
it.
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Okay.
yeah.
I think that might do it for an
Yeah,
episode.
I think that's a pretty great episode. Mostly
Yeah,
because
it was
I
great
was
because
part of
you were
it.
here.
Yeah, of course,
Yep.
exactly. See, you know how it works.
I appreciate you jumping on to
Yeah,
help me out.
of course. I've been dying to talk about Rebirth because none of you have been playing it, and I know Will doesn't
That's
want
right.
spoilers, so haven't been
Yeah.
able to talk to him about it.
Right. Well, now was your chance.
Yeah.
You'll never get to again. Sorry.
Yeah, I figured. It's fine.
But yeah, that's gonna do it for this one. We still got to talk about Tekken, and I know AJ's probably dying to talk about Tekken, so that's probably actually the next episode. But until then, by next episode, I'll probably be married,
Oh yeah.
which is
Exciting.
exciting. So yeah, and that's if we actually wait a whole month to do another episode. I don't know, but I know we're late on this one.
Just do one on the eve of the wedding.
Okay, sounds good. I
Yeah,
think
yeah,
that's the perfect time to do it.
yeah. Yeah, I mean, why not?
But otherwise, until then, I think that's gonna do it. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always glad to ramble about bullshit for a bit.
Yep, and until then, I'll say peace.
Later.